And greetings, everybody. Speaking to so many of you scattered coast to coast in the United States and in Canada, from British Columbia back as far as the Middle West, and appearing live on large movie screens, brings to my mind now something about when the first telephone was used. Alexander Graham Bell, the inventor of the telephone, said when he heard the first voice over a telephone over a long distance, he exclaimed in great awe, "What hath God wrought?" And as I did speak to all the English-speaking feast sites in the United States and Canada last October, I felt then, and I feel again now, a sense of great awe as I say, "What hath God wrought?" Do you realize, brethren, the awe-inspiring means of transportation and of communication that God has made available to us today to close out His work on this earth and to reach the whole world with His gospel? The early apostles in the first century had a very small world compared to the world now, only a fraction as many people. And it was centered mostly around the Middle East and over into Southern Europe. It required 17 or more apostles, and that wasn't enough to really cover it. But they had to travel mostly afoot or by a sailboat, which were propelled only if there was a breeze. Now today I can go to the other side of the earth and fly back to Tucson. Well, as I did only just a couple or 3 weeks ago, leaving Tokyo after I had visited China. And I left Tokyo after the 4 days of speaking to Chinese leaders. I left Tokyo about 6 o'clock on a Sunday evening. And I arrived before I started. I arrived here in Tucson, Arizona at 2:30 the same Sunday afternoon. Of course, I had crossed the international date line on the way, which gave me a little bit of help. But that reminds me about the old joke of one saying he could run faster than the other fellow, and he said, "Well, when I runs a 100-yard dash, I arrives before I starts." And I was just thinking that I arrived back here, really, in just a single airplane ride, almost halfway around the earth. Well, I have many very important things that I need to say to you right now. This is the fifth day of a new decade. And I wonder if you realize this may be the last decade of this world as we know it. Now we have entered the 80s, and we may well see the finish of God's work during this decade. Very, very possible, if not actually likely. More of that later. But first, 1 year ago, day before yesterday, Satan launched his most massive blow up to date to destroy the work of the supreme Almighty God by the massive invasion of the legal arm of the largest state in the United States, the state of California. Now, Jesus said, "If they have persecuted me, they will persecute you." I have known all along that we were destined to be persecuted. And I wonder if you realize that it is nearly always the power of human government that the governments of this world have set up that are the persecutors of God and the work of God, and it has been that way for 6,000 years. Soldiers of the Roman government crucified Jesus Christ. Of course, the pressure was brought on them from the Pharisees who were in the lower echelon of under the Roman government and serving the government, and they had demanded his crucifixion. But let's go back now to the time of Adam. Adam's wife listened to Satan and transmitted it on to Adam, and rejected the government of God. God had been talking to Adam and Eve, and he explained all about the government of God, how it had been in force on the earth under angels. But the angels had rejected it and had turned traitor to the government of God. Now, Adam had a chance to restore that government of God on the earth. But he believed what Satan said when Satan said, "You will not surely die," when God had said, "You will surely die if you take of this forbidden fruit." And so God said to Adam and Eve, in effect, when he drove them out of the Garden of Eden, and he barred entrance back into the Garden of Eden, and he said, in effect, "You are the pioneer of all the human race. The entire race of humanity will come out of and from you. You have rejected me. You have rejected me as your God. Go form your own religions. You have rejected me as the foundation of learning and of knowledge. So form your own knowledge." And that's what we have in the colleges and universities today. And it's full of, more fables and errors and lies than it is of truth. And then he said, "Go form your own governments." And that is what man has done. And we have the governments of man all over this earth, and every one of them have been influenced and practically set up by Satan. Now, man has formed his own governments, but Satan has influenced them. It was the government of Egypt that enslaved God's people Israel. And God said through Moses, "Let my people go." And today the United States is saying to the people in Iran, "Let my people go." But they're not paying any heed, and we're not doing anything about it. Now, when God said, "Let my people go," to Egypt, he did something about it. And with miracles, he brought his people out of the land of Egypt. And he saw to it that he got them out of there. Well, at least we say that there's no way we could do anything, and we're not doing anything. Well, I'm going to come back to that a little later and show you what is the situation of the moment over in Iran and in the neighboring countries over there and in Russia. Now, Satan tried to destroy Jesus as an infant, and later he tried to destroy him before he could preach a word when he was about 30 years of age. And now, if you will turn to John in the New Testament, John, the 11th chapter and verse 30. "Therefore, they sought," that is, the Pharisees, "sought again to take Jesus, but he escaped out of their hand." Now, we have many people in the church, a few, I don't mean many, I mean a few, and there have been a few ministers that are now ex-ministers in the church that have said that we should just cave in when the government of the state of California came down to try to destroy the church of God and destroy the work of God, so we couldn't go to the world with the message of the kingdom of God any longer. They quote the scriptures that say that we are to be obedient to the powers that be, and that they are ruling for our good. Well, do you know, if you will examine those scriptures again, you will see they're speaking to the individual in his individual life. For example, if the government says you cannot go over 55 miles an hour in your automobile, we're going to obey that. We're not to disobey that. We come to a red light, we're to stop, because that's the law of the land. We obey the law of the land in things like that. But when they tried to stop Jesus from even growing up, God saw to it that he was protected and that he did grow up. And when Satan tried to stop him from preaching before he even got started, Jesus outsmarted him and thereby qualified to be the one to replace Satan. And Satan knew that he was on trial for continuing at the time and continuing in the rule of the earth. Well, then the Apostle Peter, a day or so after the day of Pentecost, it could have well have been the very next day, Peter and John had entered the temple at Jerusalem, and there was a cripple, a beggar there, that was begging for some money. And Peter said he didn't have money, but he said, "What I have I will give you. In the name of Jesus Christ, rise up and walk." Now, this man was well known by everybody, and he had been crippled so that he couldn't walk from the day of his birth. Well, that aroused a great crowd. And they came, and Peter had a chance to talk to them, and he preached, and about 2,000 were converted that day. But Peter and John were both thrown in prison for that. The state got after them. The state government was after them. It was the Pharisees, but remember, the Pharisees were part of the government. They were in the lower echelon of the government of Rome. And they threw them into prison for the night. Now then, we come to the fourth chapter of the book of Acts, beginning with verses 18 and on through verse 21. Acts 4, beginning with verse 18. And they called them and commanded them. Well, this was after they were released from prison the next morning. They were brought before the representatives of the government. Now, if we should always obey the government, just think what Peter and John did. These government men called them and commanded them not to speak at all, nor to teach in the name of Jesus. Well, then, Peter and John, according to some of our ex-ministers that have been disfellowshipped from the Church of God, should have said, "Yes, sir, we will obey you, sir." But what did they do? Then Peter and John answered and said to them, "Whether it be right in the sight of God to hearken unto you more than unto God, judge you." In other words, we are to obey the powers that be, but we're to obey God more than man. And that's what Peter said exactly right there at that time. Now then, we turn over to the 12th chapter of the book of Acts. And I want you to notice the first 7 verses. Now, about that time, Herod the king, now notice this was the local king under the Roman Empire, and he was a man in government. Herod the king stretched forth his hand to vex certain in the church. Always it's government against the church. And he killed James, the brother of John, with a sword. And was a murderer, and the government was perfectly willing to stoop to murder if necessary. And because he saw that it pleased the Jews, he proceeded further to take Peter also, than were the days of unleavened bread. So that they were observing the days of unleavened bread in the New Testament church. And when he had apprehended him, that is, apprehended Peter, the king, the government ruler, put him in prison and delivered him into 4 quaternions of soldiers to keep him, intending after... It says Easter, and this is a mistranslation. In the original Greek in which that was written, is translated Passover. After Passover, to bring him forth to the people. Peter, therefore, was kept in prison. But now, what part did the church have in getting the gospel out to the world? But prayer was made without ceasing of the church unto God for him. And when Herod would have brought him forth, the government would have killed him. The same night, Peter was sleeping between 2 soldiers bound with 2 chains. They had him bound in chains. And the keepers before the door kept the prison. And behold, the angel of the Lord came upon him, and a light shined in the prison. And he smote Peter on the side, that is, the angel did, and raised him up, saying, "Arise up quickly." And his chains fell from his hands. And Peter then was led out of the prison because the brethren had prayed. You see, the lay members of the church are given the part of backing the apostle who is to get the gospel out. The word apostle simply means one sent forth with the gospel. And it was the apostles that were taking the gospel to the world. Not the lay members, but the lay members backed them with their prayers, with their tithes, and in every way with their encouragement, every way that they could. So you see how it is the government that has always been persecuting the work of God. Now, I don't know how many of you have read Fox's Book of Martyrs. That's quite interesting if you could get a copy. You probably can find a copy in a secondhand bookstore and it won't cost you very much. But some things I'd like to say to you about that from Fox's Book of Martyrs. It shows how the persecutions were coming on down from the emperors of the Roman Empire. Take Matthew 16 and verse 18. Matthew 16 and verse 18, where Jesus said, "And I say also unto thee," speaking to Peter here, "that thou art Peter, and upon this rock I will build my church, and the gates of hell," meaning the gates of the grave, "shall not prevail against it." God said that his church would always survive. Now, government has always tried to completely destroy the church of God. That's what's going on right now. They're trying to destroy the government of God at its very headquarters in Pasadena, California. And so, we find in the Bible that God teaches us to keep the church surviving. There was a time when Jesus, they were after him to kill him, but his time hadn't come yet. And so he escaped from them and hid so they couldn't find him. Now, shouldn't Jesus have said, "Oh, well, yes, if you're of the government, I must just give in and let you kill me"? Well, when his time came, he did, because that's why he came. But before that time, he certainly would not do it. Well, some of those that were concerned with this big assault against the church just a year ago, day before yesterday, they thought we would just cave in. But they found we weren't made of that kind of muscle. We didn't cave in at all. Now, in this book of martyrs, Fox's Book of Martyrs, he describes some revolting tortures. At times, people who were Christians were, they had ropes tied to their wrists together and other ropes tied to their ankles. And they hitched horses at each end, and they pulled them apart until they even pulled them off limb for limb, pulled their arms off, right off of their sockets, and they were tortured in various ways until they died. Now, you will read some of the subheads at the very beginning, before they get into the worst martyrs, and one subhead says this, quote, "Account of the first primitive persecution beginning 67 A.D. under the Emperor Nero." Now, here was the Roman government under the Emperor Nero persecuting the Christians and the church. And it says that Nero perpetrated the most barbarities. Now, a few pages, a page or so later, it quote, "the second primitive persecutions under Emperor Domitian." And so it came again. And you pass on, maybe another page or so, the third persecution under the Roman emperors. And then the fourth persecution under the Roman emperors. And it gives the Roman emperor's name in each case and the date. Then the fifth general persecution under Roman emperors. Then an account of the sixth general persecution under Roman emperors. And that takes us up to 235 A.D., and then the 8th, 9th, and 10th persecutions after that. The persecutions in Persia, where the Persian government was martyring the people of God and trying to stop the gospel from going out. Now we come to the case of Dr. Arius, who was a priest from Alexandria and was fighting against the Trinity doctrine, which is a false doctrine. And all of this began, and his fight on this began about 318 A.D. Then Emperor Constantine in 325 A.D. called the Nicene Council, and the Emperor of Rome said, "I'll decide this question. You vote on anything you decide. I'm going to make it a law, and we'll just kill anyone that doesn't obey it." So the Trinity doctrine was accepted. Now, if you want the truth about the Trinity doctrine, you'll want to read my forthcoming book. It isn't completely written yet. I had written it once, and I'm rewriting it, and so it hasn't gone to press yet. A Voice Cries Out, and I hope that it'll be ready for the bookstores by the autumn of this year. Then there was the Colosseum in Rome, a great amphitheater, and surely if you've ever gone to Rome, one of the sights you want to see is the old Colosseum. Of course, it's kind of a historic wreck now, but it used to be a Sunday afternoon sport to cast the Christian believers into the Colosseum down below. Then they would loose a lot of hungry lions to tear them apart and to devour them and eat them and have a good meal on them. Then we finally come to the people called the Waldenses. Now, that gets us down to about the beginning of the 13th century, I think about 1200. But, no, I've got an account here that in 1147, that the Waldenses would not admit of any proofs relative to religion, but what could be decided from the Scriptures. Now, Peter Waldo is a man that Dr. Herman Hay has often compared to me, because he was a leader in the church at that time, and he was a native of Lyon, and I'm way off in my pronunciation of French words. I'm intended to ask Henry Cornwall how to say that, because he's French and I forgot it. Anyway, a strenuous opposer of popery, Waldo received the appellation of Waldoes. I mean, his followers were called Waldoes or Waldenses. Waldo was a man eminent for learning and for benevolence. Now, I'm quoting this from Fox's Book of Martyrs. But Waldo answered that he could not be silent in a cause of such importance as the salvation of men's souls, wherein he must obey God rather than man. The government had tried to silence him. The government had sought to absolutely murder all of his followers and completely destroy the work of God at that time. When Pope Alexander III was informed of these transactions, he excommunicated Waldo and his adherents and commanded the Bishop of Lyon to exterminate them. And, in other words, just to murder, to kill them. Thus began the papal persecutions against the Waldenses. But remember, in those years, the papacy was merely the woman riding the beast. In other words, the government was doing whatever they said. And it was not, well, the religion was the Babylonian mystery religion, a pagan religion, and not that of God at all. They were persecuting the gospel of Jesus Christ. Waldo remained 3 years undiscovered in the city of Lyon, though the utmost diligence was used to apprehend him. He didn't just cave in. He didn't give in to the government. He escaped just as Jesus before had done, and just as the angel helped Peter to do, and which is the teaching of God. But, now continuing to quote from Fox's Book of Martyrs, but at length he found an opportunity of escaping from the place of his confinement to the mountains of Dauphiné. He soon found means to propagate his doctrines in Dauphiné and Picardy. Maybe you remember the song Roses of Picardy, which so exasperated Philip, the king of France. Now we get into the king of the government again, the king of France, that he put the latter province under military execution to murder all of those people. There again, it's the government doing it. Notwithstanding these persecutions, the Reformed religion, that is, of Peter Waldo, continued to flourish, and the Waldenses in various parts became more numerous than ever, the Pope using all manner of arts for their extinction. Their lands were seized, and their grounds were confiscated. Now, that's precisely what the government was trying to do 1 year ago, day before yesterday, with us. To seize all of our ground, all of our properties, all of our buildings, and take them over. And if they could succeed in that, then they would come against the Catholic Church and the Methodist Church, the Baptist Church, and incidentally, all of those churches have come to our aid through their legal departments and have sent very strong letters of protest to the state Supreme Court. And that includes also the National Council of Churches and a number of others, perhaps not quite so large. But those are the largest churches in the United States. Well, getting back now to the Book of Martyrs, Peter Waldo continued to preach boldly against the errors of the Church of Rome. The monks, upon the least surmise of information, delivered over the Reformed, that is, the followers of Waldo, to the magistrate, and the magistrate delivered them to the executioner. There was no real trial at all, no witnesses. They were just on anyone would charge it. Now, some former members that have been excommunicated and put out of the church were out for revenge, and they made some very great, blasphemous, false charges. And the state of California came and provoked this lawsuit. Now, mark you, it was a lawsuit. It was not a case of charging us or arresting us on a charge to be imprisoned for anything wrong. We were not accused of any wrongdoing whatsoever by the state. But the ones who convinced the state to bring the suit went to the papers and the newspapers and news on television, spread this thing that we had sold so many million dollars, as Mr. Rader said in the beginning of this program today. Well, so it goes. And we have had to fight, just as the people of God have always had to fight against government trying to completely extinguish the work of God, trying to destroy it completely. That's what they were trying to do to us. Now, let's see, where are we today in the world? We entered the decades of the 80s just 5 days ago. The 70s have been a momentous decade, but the 70s are now behind us. I was amazed last night on television. I saw a listing of the prominent people that were so well known, many of them were celebrities from Hollywood and so on, who had died during the decade of the 70s. And it's amazing. I didn't know that all of them were dead yet. But it makes you realize how many things can happen in a decade. Now we're in the 80s. This may be the decade that will end this present world. And I hope so. I think we should all be praying, Thy kingdom come, and God's will be done on earth as it is in heaven. So where are we now? As I said, we've entered the decade of the 80s. 10 days ago, the Soviet troops invaded Afghanistan. Now, we've been having a lot of trouble with the fact that the government of Iran are backing a lot of dissidents, or really, what is the word? They're not students, who are holding United States government officials hostage. And now a new thing has happened just 5 days ago. Soviet troops entered Afghanistan. Let me just say, now that you are, the attention of the whole nation is on Afghanistan. A few years ago, I was invited to visit Afghanistan and have a private meeting with the king. But before I could arrange to make the trip, the government was overthrown, and as we know now, it was by communist influence, and Moscow appointed the new head of government. I don't know whether he was called a president or what, but anyway, I never was able to go there. And now, 10 days ago, at least 30,000 soldiers entered Afghanistan, and more have been pouring in since.